We'll start. Welcome all to today's hearing with the Advisory Planning Commission. Before we start, I have an introduction to read. This is a meeting of the Town of Colica Beach Advisory Planning Commission pursuant to March 26, 2020 Ministerial Order Number M083. Members of the APC may participate in this utilizing electronic or other communication facilities, and members of the public will not be allowed to attend this meeting of the APC. After this meeting, an audio recording will be made available to the public in lieu of attendance at the live meeting. The recording will be available on Town's website until such time as the application or issue is no longer under consideration by Council, at which point the recording will be deleted. The APC makes recommendations to Council on matters respecting land use, community planning, or related bylaws and permits, as referred by Council or the Director of Planning. The APC is advisory and does not have any direct approval, ownership, or authority over the matters that are referred to it. Council may or may not adopt the recommendations made by this commission. The following will be the sequence for each item on the agenda: a short introduction to the application from the town staff, presentation by the applicant, questions to the applicant, the APC discussion, and a motion. And to ensure that the meeting is productive and respectful, we ask that the applicant only speak in response to questions. So we will now go to the agenda and would ask that a motion be made. And when you make a, when you respond to this, please state who you are making it, and because I can't see everyone. So I'd look for a motion to adopt the agenda as presented. With a seconder?
I will.
Susan. I'll second that.
Walter Hugan.
Susan, well, if you couldn't say who you are, because we can't, not everybody can see everyone else. So, so that was Susan moving and Walter second. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion is carried. Approval of the minutes. I need a motion to approve the minutes of our May 20th, 2021 meeting. Mover would be?
Walter Hoogland.
Walter. Second by?
I'll second Maureen.
Maureen, thank you. Discussion? Hearing none, I call the question. Those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, if any?
Aye.
Hearing none, I declare the motion carried. Is there any business arising from the minutes? Hearing none, we'll move on to new business. Today we're going to hear a zoning amendment application for 245 Mill Road. And we'll now turn it over to Luke for his introduction.
Okay, thank you. Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Well, good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair. The owner of 245 Mill Road has made an application to amend the zoning for the property to permit two single-family dwellings. The property is already split into two, so it is already zoned single-family. The reason that this zoning amendment is required is that the setbacks that are proposed would not be accommodated within the residential 14 zone, and also the parcel coverage exceeds what would be permitted in the residential 14 zone. So pushing the boundaries a bit too far to accommodate through a variance or something like that. So the proposal is to amend the zoning to residential 19, which is a higher density zone. And the density will be, you know, limited to what's proposed by way of a Section 219 form of character covenant, which is standard practice for these types of areas where design is very important to the consideration of the project. So the location is on Mill Road. It also has a rear access via what most people would know of as the pedestrian connection between, you know, beach and the Harlech walkway. So I think I'll hand it over to you, Chair, so we can hear from the applicant. I'm sure they'll provide a lot more details on the application. Thank you.
Thank you, Luke. Then we'll turn it over to John, I believe, is taking the presentation.
Thank you, Chair. And I'm just going to start a screen share here, so that I can share a few slides with you.
John, you are sounding like you're in a tin can. If you can either get closer to your mic or...
Okay, I'm going to try here. Does it still sound like a tin can?
Yeah, it still sounds tin. Don't want to miss any of your important...
Yeah, of course. Just give me 2 minutes here. The message coming up is saying... Can you see my screen there now?
We can, yes.
And I'm still sounding like a tin can, I'm guessing.
Yeah, but you're clearer, so.
I'm clearer.
Yeah. We can hear you.
Yep. Okay, good. I'll proceed. If for any reason you're not hearing me, please just interject and I'll see if I can get a mic change here.
Will do.
So thank you for the opportunity to be in front of you. Nice to see everyone again. This seems like it's becoming a regular occurrence. Ironically, we don't often have two back-to-back like this, but what we're going to be reviewing today has a lot of similarities to what we reviewed a couple of weeks ago. This development at 245 Mill, slightly different in the context that it is already two parcels. These historical parcels date back to 1914. They were created, but obviously no need for density throughout the years, and so a single family home was constructed over the two parcels. So just to give some context, this is an overview of the land use surrounding. So this is the subject property here, 245. Generally, it's surrounded by R14 single family residential, but you can see some pockets. This is SLR1 here, which is our small lot residential zone. This is SLR1 here and a little bit over here. The zone in front of you has a lot of similarities to the SLR1, which is a small lot residential. But as Luke mentioned, there's a few subtleties of SLR1 that didn't quite work. When SLR1 was created, it was specific to a development. It didn't envision multi-story buildings with the floor area ratio. So what we find is that when we have a lot like this, which has grade slopes to the rear where a basement is a logical response to the site, the SLR1 doesn't necessarily make provision for that floor area to be part of the FAR. So that's just a little background. The official community plan designation is mixed residential one, so the official community plan certainly envisions an increase in density in this particular area. The existing home on the property is about 50 years old, just 49 years old. It has a number of, you know, long-term maintenance issues. You know, investing in it would not make a whole lot of sense in the owner's opinion. It's sort of reached the end of its usable life cycle. The concept is to remove that home and replace it with two single family homes as shown in the image here. You can see the footprint, the sort of envelope matches what is taking place with the SLR1 sort of adjacent to it or kitty corner to it on Mill Road here. So it's a product type, it's a building typology that has been demonstrated and proved that it is a welcome addition to the mix of residential uses within our village neighborhood. This is an example of the home. These homes are going to be accessed on grade from Mill Road from a pedestrian perspective. A typical home, it's a single level home on the main, or it facilitates single level living. Master bedroom is located on the upper floor, open great room. These ones in this case have some south facing courtyards, but then they do have a lower level, which is, again, you can see in the elevations here is a response to the site, which falls from Mill Road down to the rear yard. So the intent of these buildings is to represent an incremental increase in the density from the one unit that exists to two. This is in a form that we believe is compatible, is complementary to the surrounding homes within the neighborhood, and totally appropriate to its context within the boundaries of the village neighborhood. It's certainly not within the commercial core. It's not within the mixed residential 2. Moving out to the outskirts or the fringes of mixed residential 1 in the village neighborhood, this type of small lot solution is one that I think, of a number of solutions that I think provide us with some much needed housing choice. This particular housing type, in our opinion, meets a really wide cross-section of demographics, not the least of which is families. And I think I chatted last time with you about the quantity of apartment-style condominiums that are on the books or under construction within Qualicum right now. Hundreds, in fact. Like, if you start counting the number of units that are on the books, you know, even within just a couple of blocks of this, there is hundreds. You think of the East Village, which is sort of on the books now. You think of the bus garage, which is on the books. But then there's developments like the affordable housing development. There's developments like the railway just down the street from that. There's one on First. There's one on Beach. A tremendous amount of product, which quite honestly has not really been demonstrated at the quantity that the demand is there. So it's going to be interesting over the next little while to see how apartment condominiums sort of bring a very different density to our community within the village neighborhood. This use that we're proposing, we think, just complements but provides a slightly different opportunity. And that family opportunity, we think, is a really important one that maybe can be facilitated through this. The format of the house with the walkout basement also lends the opportunity for it to have multi-generational living, i.e., you know, parents and kids could actually live in the same building, which I think is something that we're all looking at moving forward to some increased densities within our community, or with communities generally speaking. The building height and scale generally is 1.5 stories. It does walk out at the rear, but at the rear extremity we go back down to 1 story at the garage and then gradiate back up. So from the pathway that Luke referenced in his introduction, we have a nice gradual massing. You can see here in the illustration, gradual massing from the edge up to the center makes it well presented from the laneway, as well as going back here to the street front, you know, very compatible with what's in and around it, although it is an increase in density. Pretty careful attention has been paid to make sure that it's a really picturesque streetscape, lots of articulation, lots of movement within the roof lines and the wall plane. I think this is critical to ensuring we have a high quality of building type when we are increasing the density. I'm going to flip a page here, make sure I don't miss any notes. The next slide here, landscape. So landscape features nice south-facing outdoor courtyard spaces on the main floor, making them accessible from the main living floor of the home. Then we have outdoor living space and garden space in the rear of the lot. We're using a rhythm of 3 trees on both sides, both the laneway as well as the mill road side, to try and ensure that there's a nice interface between roadway and buildings. Parking is always an interesting one. So provision for parking, both buildings do have a 2-car enclosed garage, so there will be 2 dedicated off-street parking spaces within the garages. The one property that tapers does provide for off-street within the driveway as well. There would be a gravel boulevard on the front, which would provide, as most neighborhoods do, some lay-by parking on the street side if desired. Step code. So last time we talked, we were talking about how we were using an EnerGuide or an Energy Star rating for the quantification of the building efficiency. So in going back to the builder on this particular project, he says, no problem, we're going to commit to step three of the BC Energy Step Code. So that's a commitment to quantify to that level. But he said, you know, don't be confused. The target is absolutely four. But I think as a building community, we are sort of stepping our way into this. we're learning. We're sort of understanding better what it takes to reach these goals and reach these steps. So the commitment is three, but the goal is certainly four. That's going to make sure that we have a quantified energy performance to these buildings, which is significantly greater than what is required under current building code, which is a big positive, I think, in new development. I have two more points to share. Stormwater management was a request of council that it would be provided. We have provided a preliminary, we call it a rainwater management plan. We don't have storm within the village neighborhood generally in Qualicum. So the rainwater management plan has been prepared, it's submitted. The drainage concept or the plan is on-site drainage, which is typical in many cases where the soil conditions are favorable. This allows the rainwater to move into a rock pit where it percolates back in, recharges the aquifer, and ensures no impact downstream. So there's no increase in pre-development flows because we will be dealing with that water on site. I think that's everything from a general overview. I want to make sure there's lots of time to answer questions. The summary, we think this is a great opportunity to increase, an incremental increase in density that's going to be compatible, complementary, and brings this really important aspect of a wide cross-section of demographics that could use it, and families being a key one. Within the village neighborhood, there's a place for a variety of housing choice, and I think that's critical. We think this is a really important one of those housing choices. I will turn it back to the chair, and I will look forward to answering any questions.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that. Again, I just would like to remind the members the format that we're going to follow. The first round of discussion will take place with questions, clarifications, or situations that you would like to have reviewed by the applicant in terms of any changes that you might think would be appropriate. And please reserve your comments, like or dislike, concerns to when we're discussing as the committee. So we'll start with Walter.
Okay. Thanks, John, and to the delegation. First of all, I really like what you guys are doing. I support increasing the density and what you're doing. I have a couple of questions around the rezoning. It might be more for Luke because it just confuses me a little bit in with regards to going to Section 219 to ensure that there's only one unit per parcel. Now, what does that mean for 30 years down the road? Because we're looking at homes right now. We're hoping to put a legal suite in, for instance, and not duplex it out, but an in-law suite, like actually what John was referencing. Well, maybe a family suite or an income or rental income for future. So as the community grows, that we have an opportunity not having to go back. So Luke, I guess the question is more for you. Does that stop us from doing it when you're actually saying in the covenant that you're to ensure only one unit, or can we get another unit being used in the lower floor?
Yeah, sure. So through the chair to Walter, the scenario that you're imagining, I guess, is that at some point in the future, someone wants to turn the lower floor into a separate rentable suite, like a secondary suite by our bylaws. And you're right that the current way we're looking at the Section 219 covenant would say that they can't do that. So if we head down this path, what they would need to do is discharge that covenant, which would require approval from the town at some point in the future. So, you know, status quo, if this moves forward and we don't hear anything else from the applicant about, you know, wanting to have that flexibility, that'll be either way. The alternative is if you think it's important, you know, during the recommendations part of this meeting today, you could certainly address that if you want to ensure that there's flexibility in the future. Does that answer your question, Walter?
Yeah, it does. So the 219 note for a single unit is exactly that. And so it's incumbent on the developer at this point in time to make a decision whether or not there's that potential for future, I guess a future benefit to the community by putting a small unit there and perhaps even do infrastructure to do a small kitchen or a bathroom or something like that. Has that ever been discussed with John, with your group, and is there any benefit to it, or have you kind of nixed that idea through the chair?
Yeah, through the chair again to Walter. We would love the opportunity for there to be the future potential for suites within the zone. There, you know, this part of the process is somewhat complex. When we made the submission to the town, because there was not a zone that we felt was a perfect fit existing, we submitted it as a comprehensive development zone. So we asked for it to be a CD zone. Luke and Rebecca, you know, in their role, you know, found this R19, which had, you know, so many similarities to what we were requesting, but one of the glaring omissions within that R19 is the provision for secondary suites, and use isn't something we can adjust within that zone. So, you know, if they were to leave it wide open for two units, maybe there's not enough design control there. That's where the 219 came into play. But I would absolutely, and the client absolutely sees this as a huge benefit if there was the ability to have a secondary suite within the land use.
I don't see it main floor or the basement suite right now, John, as the chair. What's currently being planned for that space? Nothing, or is it just going to be an open space? What's the idea?
The concept at this point was to leave it open so that there was adaptability potential. There would be one bedroom, one bathroom finished down there, but then allowing the remainder to be adaptable. And the provision for future-proofing for suites is absolutely something that was going to be contemplated as part of the development.
Okay. Well, I certainly support, you know, something with having the potential for future or an in-law suite, you know, so you can have mom or dad come down and live with you or whatever, brother, sister, and how that plays out in the future. But that would be a great consideration for the development team to consider. Thanks. I've got a couple of other things as we go through it. Through the chair, can I continue or show?
Go ahead, go continue, please. This is your opportunity, Walter.
I keep coming back to this whole idea of not the density not being used, but I think by virtue of the way the building is built, that you can accommodate something like an in-law or suite for future development. So, but there's a lot of staff comments with regards to the density, and I think I'll just start. One of the things that keeps coming here, it's the same thing again, it's about the sidewalk stuff. And you guys, or the developer has almost like a home run as far as I'm concerned, and having that pedestrian path in the back, which is, in essence, a sidewalk. And here's an opportunity, because there's not very many places in Quantico Beach that had that opportunity working together with the town to actually set set the tone of what can be done on a pedestrian path like that. Currently, the way the plan shows is cars backing onto a single lane. And of course, I drove by there, and they got these wonderful log posts coming out of the ground, and just like we see at the golf course and other parks throughout town. And I keep thinking, we can do better, you know, if it comes to developing in town and do something that's a little bit more unique and better. It's the main entrance to the home, if you really think about it, in terms of the vehicle traffic. And also, it's a path that's really used well. There's a lot of people going down that path. So the interaction between what's happening on the pedestrian path and the cars going in and out of there, first of all, there's a safety consideration that should be taken care of. A car coming out of the garage, east side garage, is going to be a little bit of a struggle to come out of that, and then they're going back right into the wood post. Now you feel it, and who knows if there's a child there or not. From a design perspective, it would be nice to get some ideas on how we can do something better, and also the turnaround there, because you don't want to back in there and then back up going west on that lane. So there's consideration should be given to a turnaround or something that's safe for that transport lane, so that we can do better. Do things like going back to Holland and some of the and the bollards and what they do along there and chains or you might even be able to do something organic. I'm not a designer, but I do see some of that interaction happen between the path and the home, and particularly vehicle traffic. And this is another one for the town to answer, I guess, on that same point, is that that's actually town land. And how are we going to take care of it later on? Because the responsibility of the town, who's going to clean that when there's a foot of cycle or snow? And who's going to maintain that? And how is that going to be done? I think there's got to be consideration to, first of all, pave it, no doubt. I think it's very important for traffic. I know I've tried to do it. Some of the projects that I've worked with, that we just put gravel down and think, okay, now we've got a permeable surface, and we've got, we can feed the earth with water. But the first thing that the homeowner or the operator of the facility does is pave it, because it's got nothing but maintenance issues built around it. So it's going to be paved anyway, so let's get it right. Let's do it in a design fashion, some coordination between the town and the developer. I don't know how it looks, but it's a really nice opportunity to showcase how we can do something like that in Boston Beach longer, because we want more of those paths, and we're going to have more of those places where we're going to be backing into that. So that's a comment to do it. I don't know if John, if you've thought about it at all, or the status of development team thought about it. What can be done there?
Yeah, through the chair, I think those are some really savvy comments as it relates to the interface between the pathway and the property. There's a lot of layers to this, I wouldn't say problem, let's call it an opportunity. The town does not like to see access off of Mill Road, so we're encouraged that the vehicular access should be from the rear of the property, and that's throughout the village neighborhood, really. We have a lane network that, is highly underutilized and would provide some really significant improvements to the you know, vehicle pedestrian conflicts and things like that that take place. So, so that's the first layer, which is, you know, the direction for these properties is for it to be accessed from the rear, from the laneway. Now, when the trail connection there was redone, I don't think there was a ton of consideration for the reality that this particular block would need to be accessed via some kind of driving surface back there. We did speak, you know, I'd say at least once with Luke regarding, you know, this issue or this opportunity. The general sense was that we wanted to keep the development within that area as modest and informal as possible. You know, like as soon as you put asphalt down, which I agree from a maintenance perspective, it certainly mitigates some of those issues, but from a traveling on it, from an encouraging travel on it perspective, you know, the less formal it is, the less sort of activity it potentially has. So that idea of informal, and I would encourage you, and I bet Walter you have, but maybe for the rest of the APC board members, the town has a tremendous study that was done on green laneways, and they did this study to look at, you know, what and how we open up these laneways in the most sort of responsive way. And that includes things like drainage, because drainage within the village neighborhood is a huge problem. Drainage, vehicle access, pedestrian travel. And there are some pretty interesting sort of recommendations within that report. And I would say that most of which are pretty informal laneway development, like right from, you know, just sort of grass creek paving strips or like runners instead of solid asphalt, so that there was, you know, some sort of green and permeable aspect to it. Our perspective is we're requested to provide access from there. It's logical to provide access from there. I think as the adjacent properties choose to redevelop, which I don't think will be all that long in the future, the two homes to the east are quite old and in pretty bad condition, one in particular. So I think you will see that this vehicle connectivity to these properties will continue all the way through in some format. So as it relates to turnaround, I don't know that turnaround necessarily needs to be facilitated at this point. If I could, can I share our landscape plan once more? Is that possible to screen share once more?
Okay.
I think I need permission, maybe.
Oh.
You can go ahead.
Okay. When I'm looking, oh, there it is. Thank you. I'm rambling on a little bit about this, but I think it's an important area, and I think that lanes in general are an important sort of conversation that continues to come up with not necessarily a ton of clear direction at this point. So right now, this is a survey that's showing those bollards. You can see the location of the wooden bollards. You can see the edge of the asphalt path. This is the existing gravel driveway that accesses the property, so there's the edge of it there. So the intent is to keep a narrow driving surface, but then use reinforced grass grid, which I totally talked about last time, in these areas. So now, visually, we're not getting something that looks like a 20-foot wide driving surface. It looks, because of the more soft interface at the edge here, like a smaller sort of country road type thing. But then with the grasscrete, it allows us the maneuvering ability to come in and out of these driveways on an area that essentially is a 20-foot. That's our typical laneway, which is pretty proven that it allows for adequate maneuverability. So we're actually widening the area that will be used for vehicle circulation onto the property so that the pathway can maintain itself where it is. We'd be absolutely amicable to looking at you know, putting some trees in here, putting some something more robust as it relates to a barrier between the driveway and the pathway. I think it's mutually beneficial. I think the owners are going to be concerned with safety, you know, backing in and out here. And I think visually it provides a nice interface to that pathway. So the long answer to your question, wow, I'm wrapping up now, it took a while, is absolutely we'd be interested in improving this interface here. We have done significant things to make sure that maneuverability is improved by widening it to that 20-foot, but doing so in a way that visually doesn't encourage extra vehicle traffic down that pathway.
Thank you, John. Through the chair. So going east from that, the easternmost lot there that you have, you'll probably be beneficial for a turnaround to create something there that's, you know, like we used to call it the hammerhead, just go back in there so you can and move out and so that you can actually be traveling, seeing traffic rather than back. You might be in a position to back up. We're building this because if you're going step three, then you're building for 60 years and plus. And if you can imagine, there's 60 years, a lot of days. And there's a lot of traffic. People are going more and more pedestrian. And that's what I would like just to point out. I like your idea. But here again, this is working with the town of Qualicum Beach. I think in terms of the sidewalk contribution, let's see what we can do contributing to it now rather than trying to, you know, let's see what we can do in terms of planning it. And so that it is, because that's a sidewalk, you know, we can get it right. Through the chair, I got a couple of other comments if you don't mind, or should we just give somebody else?
John, these are either questions to either clarify or to provide suggestions as you've done with the laneway, but not to tell us how much you like it or dislike it.
Well, I support it. I really like what I see. There's a couple of comments and suggestions.
Yes, that's what we're looking for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Again, it's got to do with that laneway, and in terms of the way the current house is designed, we've got the upper floor has a roof over top of the deck, which I think is really cool. But I think for consideration to the design of it, and also for shadowing. Again, going towards the laneway, and also to the deck itself. That's right on top of the carport. Like a consideration for a hip on that side, so you can let the sun, evening sun, go in there, John. It's just a thought, but it could be a better experience both for the people in the lane and for the people that are going to be enjoying that sun deck. So, just for consideration. The removal of and the replacement of trees, I think, yes, we can have a look at the trees, but there's a couple of arbutus trees that are on the site, two of them, I believe. Has there been any thought in trying to keep them on the property and work with it, that arbutus trees have been there for a number of years and no, it takes a while for them to really come into the form of beauty and character. So, any thought on that, John? Or I know Jamie's the tree specialist. That's what I was told last time. So, I don't care where it comes from, but some thought on that, or the just make it better.
Yeah, so through the chair, Walter, we did do a detailed survey. We located all of those trees. I think one of the subtle complexities of the lot is that the way that it's been allowed, not allowed, but the way that it naturally falls from the road means that those trees are significantly below the road. We do need to regrade the property, and it's the builder's opinion that regrading in combination with, you know, attempting to clear the site for the building. If you want, I can show you. It was in your package. We located all those trees.
No,
they're sitting right in those developed areas of the building. The ones, the arbutus four of that, you know, are sitting at a grade that we just didn't, we can't keep them. I mean, I find it, you know, we would love, you make a great point, you know, an established mature tree, there's nothing better to anchor a landscape than a big, you know, existing tree. It is just really, really hard between grading and building envelope on these smaller lots to find a way to retain them. What we propose is a way to try and replace a rhythm of large mature street trees over time, both on the street interface and the lane interface. That's where we think that they're you know, going to have the greatest impact, be the most benefit to the development in the community long term. So, you know, that's our plan, is to put some nice big, and I always go back to the example of our gateway through Memorial there. I mean, those were planted as, you know, 3 cm, 4 cm trees, and those oaks are, I mean, they're phenomenal. They're beautiful. So, you know, if that is the rhythm of interface between roadways and new development within our communities, you know, go down to Oak Bay, go to places like that where those are the norm. It's a meaningful and purposeful way to bring that landscape into our new developments. Where they are right now, unfortunately, they can't be retained.
Okay. Thanks, John. I like what you guys are doing. I do support what that's it for now, Bill.
Thank you.
I guess for me, the question is about the parcel exceeding the coverage, the parcel and the 2.0 meters between buildings. I'm just looking at the plot lot then and wondering what the distance is between the buildings that are going to reside on either side. How much space is there going to be between all of these buildings? But it looks like they're all really close to me. So, John, I'm just kind of, if you catch me up, I'm not very clear on how these entirely work, but is that what I'm just seeing, that they're going to be built really close to the 251 and the 239, as close as they are going to be between each other? The houses?
Yeah, sure. So the current zoning, and this, you know, some people understand the zoning, others don't. Like, current zoning does allow a 1.5 meter setback, but it's measured to the overhang first, and it's part of an aggregate combined setback. So you can go to 1.5 meters as long as you have a total of 4.5 meters when you add the two together. So what we're asking for is, you know, the setback on the east and west sides of this property can absolutely be 1.5 meters, which is what they will be. We're looking basically to the setback in between the two homes to be consistent with that. And that's consistent with all of the small lot zoning regulations now. 1.5 meters is the 5 feet, provides enough room to circulate around the building, provides enough room that it meets building code standards for fire separations. So yes, we are 1.5 meters, but I think if you take a really close look at our site plan, we articulate the buildings on both of the flanking side yards, which means it's not one straight plane of wall. There is some subtle articulations to make sure there's a bit of relief, a bit of softening as you're interfacing with those adjacent properties.
Okay. I think that any other questions regarding the vegetation and the access have been answered, so I think I can move to the next person.
Thank you, Susan. Maureen.
Right. Trying to find the mute button. I'm the newbie here. I'm just going to go back to a couple of questions to kind of kick back to square one. Whereas I've been designing houses for over 40 years, I'm just not familiar with the zoning in the town of Qualicum Beach. I can read the zoning bylaws and I can understand them, but my experience and how they're applied is limited. So, Luke, through the chair, I have a question for you. Is this a common application to actually change a rezoning in order to accommodate a design for a property?
Through the chair, Maureen. Yes, it's not uncommon, I guess you could say. Single aspects of the zoning can easily be varied through development variance permits or, in some cases, board variance applications. But in something like this where you're playing with the density, you know, partial coverage, and you're playing with multiple setbacks, then zoning was the appropriate tool.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, thank you. Just help me understand that. So then I can go on to the next question. Now, the answer to one of the questions is just answer to Susan's question. But I guess my question to John, the designer, why, other than the side yard, which you've explained, why can you not design to the current R14 zoning? What do you have to manipulate to get this to work? Or why do you want to?
Sorry about that, through the chair. There's a couple of things to it. One of the first would be this is considered a through lot. So because there is a mill road, obviously a vehicle pathway is mill, this asphalt path that is on the north side of the property seems like a path, right? It looks like a path, works as a path. It's actually a road allowance. It's Harlech Road. So when that is applied to the property, it means that you have to have 8 meter setbacks on both sides of the property. When you apply 8 meter setbacks to both sides of the property, it becomes, you know, the envelope gets smaller again. When you apply the 4.5 meter aggregates to the side yard, the envelope gets smaller again. When you look at the total site coverage that we're proposing, I think something like a deck, which in an on-grade home would be called a patio, would be part of site coverage, but the deck, because it's above grade, you know, and logically so, it's considered part of site coverage. So when we looked at it together with planning, we have these three areas, side yard setback, the through lot, which require 8 meters both front and back, and the parcel coverage at 42%. Was just slightly below what we needed to deal with the single family homes. So what we wanted to do was bring it into what, if you look at those adjacent SLR1 zones, this is the exact typology for those SLR1 zones. But the difference is SLR1 wasn't going to provide us with the necessary floor area ratio that we needed for a basement. I know, in conjunction with Luke, I wrote SLR1 for a development we did over on the west side of Qualicum Beach. We just didn't envision basements. And when you throw, you know, 1,500 square feet of 8-foot ceiling down there, the FAR just didn't work. So this R19, because there's no FAR, the site coverage was big enough, and the setbacks were close enough to what we were proposing, so that's how we landed where we landed.
Okay, thank you. That, as far as the setbacks makes sense. Site coverage still bothers me. I'm wondering, I mean, that's a heck of a mass of a building for a single family residence. And I think, so I'm concerned about the massing. I mean, to me, why not put the covered deck over the garage and double up and compact the footprint? I don't know, maybe just me, but I like gardens. I like an area for the kids to go out and play, the dog to run around, chase the ball and do his business. We seem to be putting a lot of built surface on what is already a very small lot and not leaving a lot of gardens. So that's sort of my one concern about the mass of the house. The other is, and this has started to come up already and I think it's starting to be addressed and I think we need to explore this further. We're really losing an opportunity here. Right now, you can build two units on each lot. We could have four dwellings as opposed to the one that currently exists. So, you know, to go back to the guidance of the OCP, which is really encouraging, you know, diverse housing type, densification. When I say densification, I think of units, not necessarily square footage on the lot. So the two things, it's just one, and don't think, I'm going to address your comment regarding the broad demographic that this house serves. This is not a house for young families. One bedroom in the den, at the very most, two bedrooms on one level. A family with young children needs a minimum of three bedrooms on one level. My next question was going to be, well, what is in the basement, which I think you've answered. So there could be additional bedrooms. Great house for teenage families, where you want a separation of space. But not, it does not address young families where you need to be in, basically on the same level and have the level of supervision of young children. My question was, it actually is a great opportunity for a basement suite, or it's a great opportunity for a suite above the garage, perhaps. Sort of my concern. I don't know if you want to speak to that directly, John, to the chair.
No, I think those are keen observations, and I would say that, you know, what I suggested is that it reaches a broad demographic, and so the ability of the basement to sort of adapt itself to the end user is really where it shines. So you're correct, you know, master bedroom on the main, you know, that is something that clearly doesn't have enough bedrooms, but, you know, two or three bedrooms in the basement, and suddenly this thing is an optimal family home. Now, how that correlates with the ability to suite it, that's why we want to remain it adaptable. We think that this allows for a pretty broad buyer profile. This is a small builder looking at an opportunity for himself to build some homes. This land use would give him the ability, if there was a buyer or someone who wanted a suite, there it is. If this was somebody who wanted a family home, there it is. If this is a retiree, which, you know, welcome to all of them, there's 75% of our population is over the age of 60, something to that effect. So if we close down that opportunity from an investment perspective, it can be really detrimental. So you have to, we're leaving that opportunity open that it could be adaptable for universal access for a retiree. It could be adaptable to a family. It could be adaptable to a suite. So I think that's the beauty in land use in a zoning amendment like this, where there is the flexibility to be a few things to a few different demographics. As it relates to site coverage, I think there could be some confusion again. This building will cover no more than 50% of the site. The land use that is provided, because we were trying to find an existing land use, it is parcel coverage is 50%. So 50% parcel coverage, you know, as it relates to small lot residential, is, you know, very universally acknowledged as a more than reasonable site coverage. If you look at the landscape plan again, I think you'll see front end, rear yards, room for garden beds. There's 50% of the site which is not inhabited by structure. So we feel that's responsive and appropriate.
Okay. Fair enough. What I'm talking about is you're covering a lot of the site for one home, for one, basically one unit. Because this application came to us with the potential of a covenant for only ever one unit on the site if that goes through. So it's a lot of site coverage for one unit. It's all relative. I actually should clarify, I am assuming that what seems like that sort of second or half story upstairs, that's strictly vaulted space over the living area. There is no upper floor or no potential for an upper floor in this house.
That is correct, through the chair, yes.
Okay. Because your little, the last application we saw had that, and that was really, you know, I thought great use of space. Fair enough. But also, too, when you were going over this landscape and the access to the garage at the back, it looks like you're actually giving up some of the what so-called would be private yard for vehicle access to the garages. So, yeah, the usable area in the backyard has decreased. One other comment about this, about the rainwater management. Reading the report, it's really quite vague in that they assume it's all right. You won't know until you start digging, which is often the case. However, because you are creating quite a massive house, a lot of hard surface collecting water, there may be some concern how that actually is dealt with in reality at the end of the day. I don't know if you've pursued that at all.
Yes, and I agree with you. That report was pulled together in relatively short order based on a significant amount of practical experience. So we've done, within a one block radius, we've done, half dozen, maybe more homes in recent, last couple of years. We've used this same rainwater management solution. It's proved more than acceptable. It's designed and engineered with intelligent engineers. So we're very confident that the solution is entirely viable. We did it across the street. We did it up the street. The soils are very favorable. The design is simple. But you know what? Simple and effective are it's a great combination as far as we're concerned.
Okay. So those are the questions and clarifications I've made a note of. I think that's all you're wanting now. Is that correct? And
yes, thanks.
Over to the next person.
Yep. If there's more, we're going to have another round in case there was something that came to mind while others individuals were speaking. Just John, following on the rainwater management plan that was submitted, that you've indicated that it's anecdotal. In terms of the fact that it appears to be similar geological conditions. At what point during construction will there actually be a test of the soil, of the geology, and the determination of the design of the rock bed?
As soon as the house is removed, there will be appropriate opportunity to get into that rear yard, excavate to confirm the soil condition.
Is that something that you would do under normal conditions, or should we put that in the conditions that we're recommending to council?
It's a totally typical practice. The reality is we won't get an occupancy permit unless we sufficiently deal with the stormwater management. So. We recognize that a condition of the rezoning is a suitable rainwater management plan, which would be provided from us by an engineer, reviewed by the town and their engineer, and ensured that it's adequate for the building. So there's lots of checks and balances, and as soon as we can provide the additional detail, we will.
Yeah, the reason I ask that is the council did specifically ask for us to review your stormwater rainwater management protocols. And what you provided is just sort of anecdotal, as they say. So I think they were looking for something more specific. And if that's part of the regular routine that in the process with the town, I guess we can leave it out, and maybe Luke can provide us with some direction on that later. Just want to go back to the vehicle turning movements. Again, that's something the council was very concerned with and asked us to review. Lot A appears to be, I think the Lot A is the westerly one, right? Is that correct, John?
Yes, absolutely. So the westerly
lot. It's lot B that has the narrow or the shallow driveway, and where the end lean ends, or at least you're going to construct the lane. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. So the existing driveway, and I would caution too that in past experience. Engineering prefers us to call these things driveways, not lanes, because they do not really want to maintain this portion of driveway into these properties. So we would be continuing the existing driveway to access the second building, and we would be, as I mentioned, widening the maneuvering space from the 12-foot driveway to add 8 feet of reinforced grass grid to ensure that on property, to ensure that there was adequate maneuvering.
And earlier you mentioned in a comment to Maureen that this is actually a laning way because it's a through lot. So now you're, what is it?
That's a fair question, Bill. It is a road. It's not a lane. It's a road.
It is a road. Okay. And if it's, so it's an undeveloped road right away. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, I would like to tell Luke that, but I mean, by technical terms, it is a roadway. It has not been constructed other than the pedestrian pathway. So, you know, from a land use perspective, we're required to have the setbacks appropriate to, you know, something that doesn't actually exist there. So, you know, I don't know how to give you any more than that other than say it is by technical terms a roadway, and maybe Luke wants to jump in here, but clearly that's not how it's being used. It's a pathway and a driveway.
It's a pathway and a driveway is correct. But the existing ends at the westerly lot line, is that correct?
That is absolutely
correct. And you're going to improve from the west lot line to the east lot line?
Exactly.
Okay. And is that on the 8 or the 12 meter, 12 foot portion that is currently the roadway?
Yes, you've got it. So that is within the roadway that we are putting that driveway extension in.
And so you're going to improve that. Okay. And then you're going to add the 8 feet to the south with the grass and are you bringing the driveway material out to the lot line then?
Yeah, the current proposal is to use the driveway surface out to the gravel, but it introduces an interesting question. I don't think we had contemplated whether continuing the grass through there might be a benefit or detriment.
I wasn't thinking of that at all. I just wanted to clarify that you were bringing the hard surface out to the lot line against the lane. The dotted line that you have on your laneway turning really doesn't tell me much. It tells me a lot about Lot A, but it doesn't tell me how Lot B is actually going to maneuver. It seems to be backing, as both Walter and Maureen indicated, the end of the post of all our business here. So is there sufficient distances there to have a vehicle turn?
Yes. I mean, that would be the key word, sufficient. I mean, optimal would not be the key word. Sufficient would be. We have, as I mentioned, a 20-foot laneway is our standard laneway within Qualcomm. I live on one. So I live on Sunningdale, just down the street. My garage is off the laneway. My garage is 2 meters from the laneway. I have a Ford F-150. I am able to reverse from my garage, which sits right at 2 meters, into that laneway. This one's a little bit more unique because it's not at perfectly perpendicular angles, the garage to the laneway. So the entry maneuvering is beautiful. It works really well. The exiting maneuver is slightly more difficult, but it is adequate.
So the grass areas, the proposed grass areas, is going to give you the opportunity to inch forward and then reverse and then get yourself straightened to go out. Okay. The other, let me see what it was. The lower level layout, you say you've left that to the future owner. And that the 219 covenant doesn't include the ability to put in the secondary suite. Is that something you would like us to recommend that it be included in that covenant?
We would like to have suites. The covenant was a new addition to the planning report that we haven't had a chance to discuss with Luke.
Okay. I think the covenant was, I don't know whether it was, this, again, I'm confused, maybe Luke can clarify. It sounds to me as the covenant was simply to ensure that there was a single building on each of those lots.
Mr. Chair, I'll jump in. Seems okay. To be some confusion there. So the Section 219 covenant is a design control that the town typically implements at the time of a zoning amendment or a development permit in some cases. And the idea is to just make sure that what ultimately gets built on the site is exactly or very similar to what's proposed. Small changes are okay, not significant. The zoning was essentially written or it was picked to accommodate the proposal. The proposal is not for two dwellings. Had it been for two dwellings, we would have, you know, maybe done a different calculation or something. So certainly the comments about limiting to one unit is because that's what's being proposed. If I'm now hearing that two units are proposed, you know, what we and the APC supports it and council supports it, then we would need to make some changes to that zoning or approach the covenant a little bit differently. So I hope that clarifies it. That the idea is not to impose additional conditions. It's just to make sure that council and the community gets what they expected when it actually is built.
Okay. Does that ensure or at least allow the future owner to be able to apply for a secondary suite?
Only if that's what's requested. So if they request the flexibility and council approves it, then they will have the flexibility. If they don't request it and or if council does not approve it, then they won't have it.
So then to John, would you like us to recommend the council include that opportunity for a secondary suite in the 219 covenant?
Yeah, so I mean, Luke is absolutely right. We've given him something that represents a single family home on each of the two lots. I think, as I mentioned, when we submitted it, it wasn't under the R19 zone, and most single-family zones within the village neighborhood have the provision in their land use, in the permitted land use, for a secondary suite. This one doesn't. So, you know, it's a really nice fit other than that one factor, and we haven't had any dialogue, so Luke would have no reason to believe that that was something that was being contemplated when we submitted. We had the assumption that, you know, the secondary suite, you know, and you know what they say about assumptions. So I think that if there was room for us to have a little bit more conversation with Luke, I'm pretty sure we could figure out how a secondary suite could be provided while still ensuring that we get what is being proposed as it relates to form and character, which is, like Luke said, the important part of the 219 covenant.
I'm still confused on how that would go. The form and character is the external portion of the building, and that's from what I gather from Luke 219 is concerned with. But they seem to, in just reading the background material, it seemed that the 219 was being put in for to ensure that it was just one dwelling unit on each of those lots. So I'm confused about the reason for the 219 covenant. Go ahead, John.
The simple explanation is that the land use that was selected, the parcel area that's required per dwelling, would permit two dwellings on this lot. So you only require 250 meters of site area per dwelling. So, it allows that, but what Luke's intent, which is rightfully so, if we were to get that zoning and then suddenly pop up a duplex on both lots that didn't look anything like what we had submitted, it would be a problem. So
that was my original interpretation of that, but with all that other conversation regarding the secondary suite, it's confused the issue. I'm still not sure as to whether we want to recommend or we would like us to recommend to council that somehow they enable you to allow a secondary suite in the R19.
To me, that sounds great. I mean, with that recommendation, I think it would give myself the tools to speak with Luke to see what we could do either within R19 or a compatible zone that would allow exactly what you're looking at, but with the provision that that lower floor could have a secondary suite, much like all other, you know, most other single family dwellings within the village neighborhood.
And it goes then to address the concerns that both Walter and Maureen brought out in terms of the OCP looking for densification and is not really providing an identification. Okay, well, is there, my question, is there any other, Susan, would you like another go at it?
Questions, no.
Okay, Maureen.
Yeah, thank you for sort of pushing that clarification about this covenant, because and I'm just going to reiterate to make sure I understand this correctly. So we're trying to ensure that there's only one building on the site, a single family residence, but there is a potential for it being a single family residence with a secondary suite in the basement, which isn't changing the form or character at all, but is allowing densification. So, and again, this probably, you know, might be, have to be moved to respond to that. So there is an opportunity to ensure that you've got the built form that's being proposed here, but at the same time, densification, as opposed to, I guess, what we're trying to avoid is all of a sudden a duplex or two buildings popping up. But in my experience, again, in other municipalities, are these documents, are these designs basically not sort of registered or something, or are they not part of the covenant to ensure that that is the built form that gets built at the end of the day? So is that something you can clarify, Luke, through the chair?
Through the chair, Maureen. That is something that we would put in place. So that's the point of the form and character covenant is for design controls in the future. Because this is single family, there's no development permits associated with future construction. So this is our only chance to regulate form and character. And the form and character covenant, or Section 219 covenant, is the way to do that. Just a little bit of a technical comment, and that is that a 219 covenant can regulate all sorts of stuff. Form and character is just one little bit of what's potentially covered in a 219 covenant. So if the regulation of density is confusing, it's probably a miscommunication on our part by referring to it solely as a form and character covenant, because you can actually do a whole lot of things with a covenant, a Section 219 covenant. You know, you can impose positive conditions or negative conditions on a site and upon owners, and that covenant then carries to future owners. So that's just a little sidebar, you know.
Well, I think that clarified a lot of the previous discussion, Luke. Thank you. Sorry, Maureen.
Yep, that's it. Great. Thanks. I just wanted to make sure I was understanding everything before. That's it.
Walter, any further discussion that you would like?
Yeah, just a couple little things. Now, first of all, we're talking about a unit, but what is a unit? You know, like if we we're thinking if the basement, for instance, had a kitchen and a bathroom, you got a bathroom down there anyway. And we just put a kitchen down there. Does that constitute another unit? I'm not thinking it would. So, but if we can say that the to support future planning for the developer as well as for town, add to the Section 19 perhaps that the downstairs would be adaptable to a further living space for future consideration, but have it ready, you know, so that we're not, so you can create, just have an adaptable. I like where you guys are going in terms of wanting to create the density. I think it's a really great discussion, and I think you should keep doing that, you know, because get attainable housing, very important for our community. The other thing I really like about what the builder's talking about is just enhancing the building as well, going to step three. I love those discussions. I think we're only getting better and better at it. So I certainly would support this project. Those are my comments.
Okay, thank you. Any other further questions of John? Seeing none, we'll go into discussion amongst the members, and we'll start off with Susan. So here's your opportunity to talk about the good things, the bad things, what you'd like to see, what you would like not to see.
Well, I think that the building is perfect in a lot of ways, because I'm finding a lot of my clients are looking to have sheltered outdoor space, so I think, and of course, outdoor space that they can enjoy the sun. We have so much rain around here sometimes that people can enjoy themselves out there. So I applaud that whole breezeway situation for somebody to have outdoor space for a good part of the year. And the fireplace it looks like you have there. I think that I know that it won't accommodate, full-size families, but a lot of people aren't having full-size families anymore. We're having smaller families, and people who are lucky enough to get here after they've had a long career to enjoy something as new as that they can, bring their teenage or almost university students here and still accommodate. And then there's also that parent that we get to look after when they get older. So I think that that's great that there's space for them. Whether it's a legal suite or whether it's in-law, it's going to accommodate more people. And I think that you've addressed a lot of the things that I think people really, really want that I'm talking to in my world. So I applaud you on it. It's really, and it's quite beautiful as well. So I just love how the whole, you used that land use was perfect, the way you sloped that, used that slope. And I first thought, gee, why wouldn't it be the other way around? Why wouldn't it be, entrance on each side, but I Harlock Road would be not a very good frontage, that's for sure. I didn't realize where that was at first. So, no, I applaud you. It's really great. I really think it's a good project. So you have my vote for yes.
Well, we're not there yet.
Yeah, almost.
We have a motion that's going to require some crafting, so that's great. Maureen?
I love the look from Mill Road. It's great. It really falls apart at the back. I was really disappointed when I went around and saw the back. The roof lines. Roof lines, my mantra, if you know me, roof lines make or break the house. And there's just some kind of weird things, I think, happening. In order to accommodate that broad front-to-back span. And it's the garage in particular that really bothers me. The mantra, I just don't think it's going to be very, take away the garage, it's fabulous. I can deal with the other roof lines. But there's a massing there that is not very comfortable. I know there was one comment about potentially hipping that covered roof over that covered deck. Please don't do that. it would ruin the space. Cause it is a beautiful space. Having just actually built one myself here, covered outdoor spaces are the way to go in our climate. They're beautiful spaces. So there's a lot great about it. As I say, it's just a design element, the way the roof lines are being dealt with and the mounting of the garage that bothers me. Conceptually, I'm feeling, I think, with the direction of the discussion, given, as I say, this huge mass of a house that maybe does have the potential for, if we can make it work for, the potential for a second unit. Be it a family unit or potentially a rental, secondary suite in the future, just to help that densification. Then I think I would feel better about the proposal. So yeah, I think that's it. Thanks.
Okay, thank you, Walter.
Yeah, I think it's well laid out. I'm having trouble more and more with, and it's not the fault of this developer or many others, but we're building so many buildings nowadays, and two-car garages seems to be the way to go, and you're taking up, a third of the footprint of a building, put a couple cars in, and usually it ends up being a storage space for down the road. And I wish there was other ways of doing it. So that backyard would be a yard for kids to play as opposed to parking a car. But it's the way it is right now in today's world and in the marketplace. And and for the developer and the design team to really start thinking about, are there ways of doing it differently so that we can, you know, we can have that best space. You live in a wet world here on the West Coast. I love what you guys are doing on these covered areas. It's an opportunity to learn some design features for other designers. It's just put a ping pong table out there. Steal one from Jamie there and put it out there. A great idea. Let's keep it up. You know, outdoor space is where we got to go. And you've got an opportunity there also to just walk onto a path there and that interaction with the path and the home. It can be spectacular. I kind of have to agree with Maureen on garages, but it's a way of, that's where we're at right now in today's world. Consider it for the future. We need it differently if we can. It's a great project, and let's help you guys try to get that density in there if we can, and for future as well. Windows, some of the views that you have shown for glazing, so again, that the interaction between the streetscape and the downstairs, but it's also, let light come in, and I see some, your east-west elevations aren't really showing a whole lot, but make sure that that's well considered to, so that you let light in. It's healthy. And John, you know all about that kind of stuff, but I just really encourage you to maintain that. Let the sun in. It's healthy. It's the right thing to do. Good project. And I would think that we're going to go for a recommendation here, but one of the builder's first projects, it's a good way to go. Thank you, Bill.
Thank you, Walter. Okay, just looking at the land use, the R19, other than the fact that it doesn't meet the density of the OCP, it meets all the provisions of the R19 zoning, and the proposed single units per parcel is really compatible with the adjacent neighborhood and the pattern of the development immediately adjacent. In terms of the OCP, again, the OCP is big on increasing the density within the village neighborhood. This property really isn't conducive to bring that kind of proposed density in due to the development that's adjacent to it. But it, the design, it meets all of the other overall visionary intent of the OCP, and as I say, it's compatible with the adjacent properties with the single unit development. It's a great plan for adapting to the slope. It really is, and creating outdoor spaces that are both covered as well as open. It's a fantastic design for dealing with that slope. And again, high quality, as we always see from you, John. It's encouraging to see the builder wanting to move towards, or it's ensuring a step code 3, whatever that may be to us all, and then trying to work towards step 4. The laneway development, I think is up in the air, but what you have proposed, I think, is going to work. So it will incorporate what's existing there and what needs to have happen to ensure that the vehicular use is proper. So that brings us to a motion. So I've kind of heard everybody is in favor of the land use, which I think clearly, I think from what Luke had said earlier, we're really dealing with the zoning amendment only as the the building itself will be dealt with through a development permit. Is that not true? Is that true, Luke?
No, in this case, because it's single family, there will be no development permit that follows this process.
Okay, so we don't deal with the design at all in our motion. Is that correct?
Well, design is relevant, right? Because it's a zoning amendment, you can certainly consider design. The difference is that if it were only a development permit, then that would be the only thing you could consider.
Okay. So again, in the past, we've done two motions, one dealing with the zoning and the other then with the design. But can we incorporate the two?
Yeah, I think it'd be appropriate to address both of them.
Address both of them? Okay. So the first motion I would put forward for us to consider is that the Advisory Planning Commission supports the zoning application for 245 Mill Road from residential 14, R14, to residential 19, R19. That would be the first motion that we would want to consider. Then we'll deal with the actual development and the 219 forming character covenant and anything else we want to add into the design. So, if we're in agreement, could I have someone move that motion?
Bill, may I interrupt? We're being asked to vote on a motion, but we don't know really what it entails until we deal with 219. Is that not correct?
No, we're simply saying that the zoning application, moving it from an R14, which is currently a Zone 4, to residential R19, with all of that, all of the rules associated with residential 19.
And just to totally ignore the covenant, we deal with that separately.
We're going to deal with that later.
Can I ask a question? And this one's probably to the chair, to Luke. Section 219, can I also apply to the Harlech Road driveway entry? There's a section 19 that we could put on the property of it being the access to those two particular properties, and it is to be maintained and by the landowners, those two landowners.
Through the chair to Walter, correct me if I'm wrong. Are you asking whether a covenant could require that the owners are the ones responsible for the maintenance of that driveway, that shared driveway?
Yeah, because it came to mind when John and Bill were talking about it, because it's a driveway. They're safe. And if somebody's going to want to go in and out of there, on a snowy day, that driveway should be looked after by the owners of those properties. It makes it keeps it nice and clean in terms of whose responsibility and whose maintenance it is to look after. And then it also puts the onus on the developer on how they want to treat that driveway. It would just. And I'm just curious whether or not that's the road we want to go down or not. It's playing the devil's advocate on it.
So that's certainly something that we could explore. I don't think a Section 219 covenant is the right tool in that case. It's more likely to be a maintenance agreement or something like that. But, you know, certainly if there's any uncertainty, I'd say everyone should understand that when there's snow on the ground, this will be the last area that the town ever plows, right behind the pedestrian walkway. So if they're in a hurry to get out, they will have to maintain it themselves.
Luke, the rear access, the northerly access, is actually a roadway that is the town's. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's a road right away.
The town would not expect the residents to be looking after the town's ownership of Mill Road, would they?
So we're talking about the walkway side, not Mill Road, right? So Mill Road, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, yeah, that's a traveled main roadway. It's not an arterial, but it's a collector road.
What I see is Walter asking a covenant to be put on for the landowner to look after a town property when the Mill Road, which is the town property, may face on to. There isn't a requirement for that. I there's a conflict there, I think.
Oh, I see your point. So if the ACC were to recommend or council would advance the idea that the property owners are responsible, that would be a bit unusual.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It has been done in the past. The only case I know of specifically was the cottages at Eagle Crest Development, which was an 18-unit development. And as a part of that, they had to sign a maintenance agreement to maintain the boulevard's landscaping for 10 years.
Well, for just a clarification of that is whether we want to pursue that in our motion, which sounds just a little convoluted.
It does. I don't want to go down that road, though.
Okay. Then let's deal with the motion regarding the zoning application to go from R14 to R19. Can I have a mover for that?
Yeah, I'm Walter.
Okay, a second?
Sure, Susan.
Susan? Discussion? Hearing none, I'll call the question. All of those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Yep.
Nay? Hearing none, I declare the motion carried. Okay. So now let's deal with the design through the covenant. So this motion would be that the Advisory Planning Commission supports the proposed single dwelling proposal subject to a Section 20 or 219 form and character, and that the opportunity for future owners to include a secondary suite be permitted. Now, I'm not sure whether the wording needs to be changed or not, but that's the intent.
Would you clarify secondary suite within the existing building envelope?
Okay. Did you want to reword that then?
Yes. Just as you said, and then just within just something that reflects the existing building envelope. Maybe does Luke have a...
A secondary suite within...
Unit.
But within the existing building envelope, Luke, is that an appropriate wording for that?
My only question is whether that would preclude the use of the garage in a potential conversion.
Oh, is that not part of the building envelope?
John, would that be part of the building envelope? Or is that considered detached?
Because it's not attached to a heated, insulated space, it is the deck that connects the two. It is technically considered an accessory building,
yeah.
But you could word it that it could be included within the primary dwelling or within the accessory building.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to get that wording. So you're not expanding the space at all. It has to happen within the walls that you already have.
Yeah, a primary building.
It's a primary building, but John, you indicated to adding accessory building?
Yeah. I think so.
Yes, through the chair. And I think the provision that would restrict any addition is the fact that our site coverage is maxed out under the current zone. So you couldn't add on to the
way.
So okay. it would just give the provision for within the confines of the built structure, including the accessory building, even though it's just a technical definition that it needs accessory.
I just want to see the covered deck or the area under the deck filled in. Okay.
Okay. Well, let's try that one again. Support the proposed single dwelling per parcel subject to a Section 219 form of character covenant and that it is built in conformity with the plans presented at the meeting, but allows for a secondary suite within the primary or accessory building envelope. How does that sound?
That fits me.
Okay. Is there anything else we want to add to that?
What are we doing about the rainwater management?
Well, we could add, I did have another one here, and that's during construction and in situ, soil analysis be done to confirm type, size, and location of the rock pit proposed in the submitted desktop stormwater management study. You want to add that?
Yeah, but yeah, and then I realized that's probably not part of 219. So sorry if I
it would be another edge further.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Further that we recommend. Is there agreement among the members?
No.
Susan? Okay, let's see if we can call this back together again. That and then Bernadette, I will send you, as I've done before, an email outlining what I think we said. So we've got that the Advisory Planning Commission supports the proposed single dwelling per parcel subject to a Section 219 form and character covenant to ensure only one unit per parcel is built in conformity with the plans presented at this hearing, and further that a secondary suite be permitted within the primary and or accessory building envelope, and further during construction and in situ soil analysis be done to confirm type, size, and location of the rock pit proposed in the submitted desktop stormwater management study. Does that cover everything we want?
Are we comfortable with the lane and its use relative to the pedestrian path? I just want to feel comfortable.
Was there something you'd like to propose that we could discuss?
I would like to see something added so that simply that there's a safe access. And accessibility be addressed through with the town with respect to the pedestrian path and the driveway into the unit. That there's I'm worried about a car. Something going straight through the bollard there onto a pedestrian there, if there was a way that could be addressed either by small curb or something that's a little bit more with a bit more safe design there.
What I got out of that, Walter, maybe. That and further address the safe access and use of the pedestrian path and driveway interface.
Yeah, that would be pretty close to what I'd like to see. And that worked out between the design team and engineering. And it's also it's coming back to this whole sidewalk thing. We can, rather than having the developer work out a whole bunch of money to do that, maybe consider that in the development moving forward. Because if you're going to spend money doing that, why give it to the sidewalk when you can do something there yourself?
I think council's already decided they want it. They want the sidewalk reserve fund.
That's the decision that's been made, Bill?
Well, council had indicated that in there. If you look at the minutes of the council meeting, that prior to adoption, the town of Quantico Beach, blah, 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 the developer makes a contribution to the village neighborhood sidewalk reserve account equivalent to the value. That was one of their...
So there's no way of us diverting that into...
Yeah, that's kind of... Why did they do that without us getting our...
I think Luke can probably answer that. There was, sorry, I think, a change in mind in, over the last year regarding installation of future sidewalks and contributions to the overall cost.
Yeah, so that's correct. The idea is to tackle larger sections of sidewalk in a village neighborhood at once rather than doing little pieces here and there. You know, but certainly if the APC has a different opinion, don't hold back. I mean, you can express your opinion, and if the approach that council has supported in this case is not what you like, then that's why you're here, is to provide advice to council. But that's the background, not to do these little piecemeal projects.
Yeah. If I could share
what I would suggest then, Walter, is there might be some disagreement amongst the members on that. So what I would ask you to do is make an amendment to, we haven't got a motion yet, so if we're in agreement with everything other than the sidewalk, I'll ask for a motion or someone to move that what we've spoken about, the motion.
Sure, I will.
Okay. Walter moved, and Susan second?
Sure.
Okay, Susan. Okay. So now, Walter, you could make an amendment to this motion to add your concern about the sidewalk, and then we can address that through voting on the amendment first, and if it's successful, then it would be added. If it loses, then you just move forward with the original motion.
Yeah, no, for discussion through the chair, if I'm thinking about this correctly, that there is a sidewalk interface that has to be dealt with, and I'm here listening to the planner and talking about having all these little custom sections all over Quality Beach, and I see his concern on that. But in this particular case, because it is a small section on a sidewalk, we can actually look at it as a unique little opportunity, create something, and if the developer is interested, rather than contributing, he would come back to planning with an idea on what can be done so his driveway and the path interface could work well for the developer. And also be something that works well for the town. And he doesn't have to contribute to the sidewalk thing, the contribution. He'll contribute it through good design as one of as a back entry to the two beautiful homes. And I don't know, I haven't got the wording for it, but that's where I'm going on.
In lieu of the... Yeah. Contribution to the sidewalk fund,
we'll figure
what the wording is, the fund, applicant applied those funds to refurbish, I guess,
the driveway.
The driveways and pathway to the north.
Is that approach the chair?
Yes.
I'm just wondering, is that not what the grass grid is all about? Like, is that not part of the safety of getting in and out of the driveway?
I think it's the safety. It has nothing to do with embellishing the pedestrian interface with the vehicle.
I understand that. Okay.
If for the town's review, the town can either take it or leave it.
It'll be council.
Town staff.
Yeah.
I think it's very valid, Walter. I think that's a good point. And just to Great. Susan, am I understanding the grass grid is on private property? Great. And we are, remember, we are dealing with a roadway here, which in other circumstances may be a little. So we're kind of proposing an alternate to
the contribution.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent idea, Walter.
Well, with that amendment, basically saying that in lieu of the sidewalk contribution, that those funds be appropriated to improving the interface between the development and the pathway to the north. I'll call the question. Those in favor of the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Individually, so I know how many.
Walter?
Yes.
Maureen?
Yes. Susan?
Yes.
Yes. It's Gary? Okay. So to the amended motion, we're clear on what the amended motion is? That we're, we support the single family or the single dwelling per parcel under Section 219, and that the that a secondary, that 219 includes the ability to place a secondary suite within the primary or accessory building envelopes, and that the an in situ soil analysis be done to confirm type, size, and location of the rock pit as proposed in the storm water management study, and that and regarding in lieu of the sidewalk contribution that the applicant supply those funds to improving the interface between the driveway and the pathway to the north. Does that sound good? And any discussion on that before we call the question? Seeing none, call the question. All those in favor, Walter?
Yes.
Maureen?
Aye.
Susan?
Yes.
Bill, yes. Motion's carried.
Thank you. Just to share before the meeting, the other APC member did have a couple of comments as well, and I think most of them were addressed.
They were. I was referring to them, Walter.
Okay.
And I do believe they were addressed. I think certainly some of it, or in essence, your amendment, I think, addressed his concern. And I will go back and have a look at it. I was reading that. He was concerned about the vehicular movement and access to the rear driveway and garages.
Okay.
And that's good. And I would ask for a motion to adjourn.
Identify. I move. Walter moves.
Walter moves and seconded.
I will second. Maureen.
Maureen, thank you. Discussion. Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor? Aye. That's great. Thank you so much for another interesting day.